Hi, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response of a day for the 15th day of Shvat for Tu B'Shvat. I'll tell you a funny story. Usually I find these tshuvot way ahead of time, and then I learn them again because I'm excerpting from them. So I find them, and I excerpt when I first find them, and then I excerpt them again as I'm reviewing them, and then when I come to the day to learn them, I learn them, and then I share them with you. And for some reason, Tu B'Shvat did not get found. It wasn't in my list at all. So I started actually taping a shiur for the 16th of Shvat, which I've already done a long time ago. And I all of a sudden realized I'm talking about the 16th of Shvat, and today's the 15th of Shvat that I'm supposed to be taping for. So I had to go find a tshuva, and there were many, many interesting tshuvot. And I also generally have started resisting using tshuvot from Igrot Moshe, from Moshe Feinstein's tshuvot, for the reason that it would be easily plausible for me to find tshuvot for almost every single day, a tshuva of Moshe Feinstein's, and I don't want this to be a series of tshuvot of Moshe Feinstein, as great as those tshuvot are. So I think, you know, something like 10% of these tshuvot are already Moshe Feinstein's anyway, and that's a large number, because I want to have, as I'd like to have, a wide group of people, because for my purposes, I want it to be sort of what the consensus of Judaism is according to almost everybody, not just what Moshe Feinstein thinks about Judaism, as interesting as that might be. But I found a tshuva that was very important in my growing up years, and that does bring up halakhic issues that we don't often get a chance to discuss, and therefore I allowed myself to do it. It's from Shut Igrot Moshe Orach Chaim Chelek Dal, the fourth time he addressed Orach Chaim questions, Simon Pei Zion, response number 87. And the topic is the Eruv in Flatbush, and it's from the 15th of Shvat of Tav Shin Lamed Chet, 1978. Now, in 1978, I was a 14-year-old. I was a 13-year-old in Shvat in 1978. I was a 13-year-old living in Flatbush, and there was much discussion about whether one could put up an Eruv in Flatbush. And the Vad HaRabbanim was headed up by Rav Moshe Feinstein, discussed in the Tshuva, that the head of the Vad was a man named Yisrael Paleyov, who I didn't know at the time, but years later, my parents took a summer home in Vacation Village, which was like a bungalow colony, but they were more like houses than bungalows. And our next door neighbor happened to be Rabbi Yisrael Paleyov, who later on passed away, I'm pretty sure. And it was a very, very nice man. And he was the Yoshev Rosh of this. And then Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, first of all, the Rabbi Solomon Sharfman came to visit him along with other rabbis to talk about the Erev issues. And Rabbi Solomon Sharfman was an extremely important figure in my growing up years, because I had many friends who went to the yeshiva, to the Young Israel of Flatbush, and they had their bar mitzvahs there, and I would hear Rabbi Sharfman speak occasionally. And I remember still, even as a child, as a 12 and a 13-year-old, thinking that Rabbi Sharfman had the greatest rabbinic voice I had heard until that time. I later heard, I won't say embarrassed, somebody who's still living, who has an equally great rabbinic voice, but in terms of great rabbinic voices, Rabbi Sharfman was, in my childhood years, the image of the rabbi. So when I saw this response addressed to Rabbi Sharfman and to Rabbi Yisrael Paleyov, Shalom, I felt like it was worth our while to spend a few minutes thinking about it. Now, the issue with the Flatbush Erev was that they wanted to put up an Erev in Flatbush, and there were many people who claimed that you could because there are too many people in Flatbush, or that the Flatbush had a Rishut HaRabim. So this is Erev basics that this tshuva lets us remind ourselves of. To build an Erev in a community, the first step you need is to make sure there's no such thing in that community as a Rishut HaRabim d'oraita, as a Torah, a biblical level Rishut HaRabim. Now, the problem is it's not clear what it takes to establish a biblical level Rishut HaRabim. But if you have a biblical level Rishut HaRabim, then you'd need like four walls, or you'd need walls around the community. You need to build walls, real walls, it seems like. It's all a question of what constitutes a wall or not. But you need higher standards of what a wall would be. You might need to lock the doors every once in a while. It gets much more difficult, if not almost impossible, to build an Erev in a community like that. Now, in smaller communities, you can do it because, so if, for example, you think of Vacation Village that I mentioned just a minute ago, that was an area where there was a bunch of houses together. Let's assume for a second that there was some kind of Rishut HaRabim in there, but it was literally fenced in, and there was literally a gate that was closed at night. So that made it clear that it wasn't Rishut HaRabim, because if it's been fenced in for the purpose of living in it, and there's a gate that closed at night, it becomes much easier to say that it's rabbinic. So that's the question that came about Flatbush. People who were, it became sort of a right-left religiously kind of an issue. The more right-wing in Flatbush didn't want it, the more left-wing did, and whatever. It became political. But they come to Rav Moshe Feinstein, apparently, and Rav Moshe Feinstein says he had said to them when they came to meet with him, he didn't want to get involved because there are many shitot, there are many opinions about how we define a Mishnah Rabbim, what we mean by delatot ne'ulot, by the locked gates, and people have a Shulchan Aruch, and they can look it up, and they can talk about it. So the only reason he's stepping in now, he says, to write something about it, and to take a firm stance on it, is because people are saying that I am the matir, that meaning that you consulted with me, and that I told you it was okay, and that is problematic for me, because I now feel like I have to make clear to you my position on this issue, and I'm going to explain it to you. So now we're in the fourth time that he's talking about Or HaChaim issues, but he points out that he had a long tshuva back in, we're not going to learn that long tshuva, but we had a long tshuva back in Or HaChaim, in the first volume, the first time he dealt with Or HaChaim issues in Igros Moshe, response number 139, and there he responded to a Tzvi Hirsch Eisenstadt, as in Steit, maybe? Yeah, and that's the long tshuva that Moshe Feinstein wrote earlier in his life about the Manhattan Eruv, which I just looked at quickly and doesn't have a date on it, so there's no way we'd have gotten to that. So we will. This is going to be our opportunity to learn from Moshe Feinstein a little bit about Eruv and Ishus. So in that long tshuva, which is about whether it's possible that an Eruv of Manhattan, Manhattan is more complicated because it's an island, and therefore you might think it has walls, you might not think it has walls, it has larger roads, it has bigger highways maybe than Flatbushtin. So that's a somewhat different issue, not a completely different issue, but a somewhat different issue. But he made clear in that tshuva, he says, what he thinks about the issue of Shishim Ribo. So here's the story. Normally, we would think of Rishon HaRabim as a place that the public can come. And there's an opinion that Rav Moshe Feinstein makes brief reference to later in the tshuva of the Rashba that others hold to halachically today, and therefore say you can't really build Eruvin anywhere, that as soon as you have an area 16 amot by 16 amot, like a marketplace or an open area, 16 amot, which is maybe 24 feet, maybe 32, somewhere between 24 and 32 feet around each side, so let's say 30 square feet, anytime you have an area like that that's open, or a road that's 16 amot wide, that's 24 to 32 feet wide, so, and then there's a long road, you'd have a deep problem being a Rishut HaRabim, right, of being a biblical Rishut HaRabim, and then all sorts of extra laws come into place. But Rashi and Tosfos, for reasons that are not so clear, and when you look them up, but this became known, Rashi and Tosfos assumed and took it for granted and believed that in order to be Rishut HaRabim, there had to be 600,000 people there. Now, the crux of our tshuva here is going to be the question of what do we mean by there have to be 600,000? Now, he's not the only one to discuss this question. What does it mean there have to be 600,000 people? Now, that's a tremendous cooler, right? Tremendous leniency, because unless you have 600,000 people, we're going to say it's not a Rishut HaRabim d'oraita, and it makes it much easier to build Eruv and Ishus. Just for example, that means the entire state of Alaska, I think, is not quite a Rishut HaRabim on a Torah level. But that became the practice to be mekil, to follow that leniency and accept that to be true. Now, I'm going to throw this out now. I meant to hold it in reserve. I'm throwing it out now, and I have no idea what Moshe Feinstein would answer to this point. Let's remember that by the time he got to America, he was, I think, 40? He was relatively old. Yeah, he was 41 when he moved to New York. Back when he was, there's a tshuva that we have done recently. Recently, Moshe Feinstein spoke about on the 7th of Shvat. So yeah. It's last week, if you were listening, it's 9 days ago. Moshe Feinstein was asked about a wedding that was witnessed by certain witnesses, and one of the witnesses' problem was that he went to the local gymnasium. He attended school in the local gymnasium, and the question was, is that a public violation of Shabbat on a Torah level? And Moshe Feinstein said the carrying of his books in the public place wouldn't count as, and this is a tshuva written from when he was in Uzda, I think, maybe now that I think about it, it was written in 1917, so he's a much younger man. But then he said, nobody thinks we have Rishut HaRabim today because of this leniency. So earlier in his life, he thought that this idea meant there was basically nowhere is there a thing, because the idea was that you had to have a road that was traveled by 600,000 people. The road itself needed to be traveled by 600,000 people each day. Truth is, there are roads like that anyway. There was some question about whether Ocean Parkway in Flatbush might be a road like that, and that may be a problem in turning it into a Rishut HaRabim at a Torah level. And there are certainly other roads that have 600,000 people traveling them a day, and that creates, even nowadays, a Rishut HaRabim d'oraita. But in early stages of his life, when he was living in Russia, he thought there was no such thing as a Rishut HaRabim d'oraita. He clearly doesn't think that anymore. By the time he writes the tshuva to the tshuva about Manhattan, he no longer thinks that's true, and he talks about these issues, and he talks about roads. But now he's going to come up with another svar, another idea that that's going to also sharply restrict the usages of this leniency. So he says that the common way to read it is that it needs a road where there's 600,000 people on that road every day, which is the language of the Machaber, where that there's a Yesh Amrim of a Be'ir who Rishut HaRabim, Pizesh Yesh Nam Be'ir Shishim Ribo, V'yesh L'Hakel, he says, he calls it a Kula, but it's not a Kula. that he now thinks that maybe to get to the 600,000, we should have been Doraita, you might be required to count the whole city at one time, as long as there are people who tend to come outside their houses, because inside their houses doesn't count for the public thoroughfare, that's just their houses. But when they need something, there are 600,000 people in this city, even if not in every street, are there 600,000, as long as in all of the streets together. And even if those people don't go anywhere, I mean, it's not a question they have to be traveling. I mean, the usual way to say this leniency and say this idea is that you need to have 600,000 people traveling a road. And now he's saying it doesn't have to be a road, it has to be all the roads together, and he's going to explain why. And I have to say his logic is fine. The only problem with it is that there's no sources for it. And I remember my father Shalom thinking about this and reacting to it as, where are you getting this from? And that's a hard question, right? Rashi and the Tosafot talk about having 600,000 on a road. We're going to see his logic for why he doesn't think it has to be on one road, and he doesn't think they have to be moving around so much. Okay, so that would qualify as Rishon Rabim. So in other words, if in the city there are 600,000 people walking around generally on a particular day or in the community, he thinks that should qualify as a Rishon Rabim Doraita, even according to Rashi and Tosfot. And that will create problems for community Erevin, because you'll have many more Rishon Rabim Doraitas than you think you do today. So where did he get that from? So he says, Dechein haya b'diglei midbar, that's the way it was when the Jews camped in the desert, b'shashenachu, right? If you might think that we're talking about when they're traveling, so when they're traveling, say that people have to travel the roads. But he says, no. What about when they weren't traveling the roads? You have people, they camp, and he says, and by the way, and there's a Rashi and a Chumash, so we should all know this, that they spent a lot more time camped than they did traveling, because if you look, in Parshat Maaseh, this is where Rashi points it out, at the list of places where they went, they went to, like, they averaged a move a year, is the way Rashi figures it out, because they spent 19 years in Kadesh Barnea, and then there's the places they went to in the first year when they were moving around, the first years before the spies went and they got punished, and there's only like 19 other ones, so it's about an average of once a year. So even if a couple times they move faster, that means in another place they stay longer. So Moshe Feinstein's point is, they would stay in one place, and while they were staying in one place, he says, this is what he says. Now, this part is an assumption that, I don't know, you have to assume what you think about. What did the Jews do in the desert when they were encamped in a place? I don't know if there's any great evidence for the answer to that question. There are different possibilities you could raise, but I don't think there's any particularly ironclad evidence for the answer to that question. So he says, it seems to him, they weren't going from place to place, from street to street, because they had no need to. So that's an interesting question, right? Think about it. If I'm in the tribe of Yehuda, and we're resting, we're camped for a year, for 2 years, for 5 years, for 19 years, what do I do every day? So I don't need my food, right? All I have to do is walk outside the camp and I get my food. So I'm not spending my day looking for food. Some part of the people probably, we'll get to this question in a second. Some part of the people were probably going to learn Torah for Moshe Rabbeinu in the center of the camp, and that might have been something that many people did, but it's not clear that all people did it. Many people did it. So that's something that happens. But what else happened? If you could argue, well, everybody socialized with everybody else and they all went, you know, from one place to the other, then you could say that the 600,000 number includes all those traveling from one place to another. Moshe Feinstein is saying, but I have no reason to think that. Why would they bother traveling? Where are they going? So that's what he thinks. And if you had some need, it would still be true, especially like today, he says that you mostly commute when you need to get to work or from work, or you need to do business somewhere. But in the streets of your own neighborhood, then you just hang out, right? And you don't have to go anywhere. So as long as, that's what he thinks, as long as you have that group of 600,000 people in the streets, yeah, that's going to be a Rishon HaRabim Doraita, and you're going to have this issue. And then he says, so what you're going to have to try to figure out is what group is in the streets every day? And to get to the answer to that question, you're going to have to figure out sort of what percentage of people go out of their houses every day. So he says he thinks it's at least got to be 1 out of 4, 1 out of 5, 1 out of 6. Because in the Midbar also, we talk about 600,000, but we know there were many more than that because we assume that there were wives and children, whatever. So that was at least 3 million people, and 600,000 number is the number we credit for being the public majority. Now, I will say that at this point, this is a little bit of a weakness in his claim, aside from the issue of his claim that they're not going to move from place to place, which I think is relatively logical. There's a little bit of a weakness because once you start talking about the fact that it's 600,000 out of all of the inhabitants, then you get into trouble because in the Torah, the women weren't in the streets. And if they were in the streets, why didn't they count? Right? And did Rashi really mean that all 600,000 men, adult men, who were in the account were going out every day? So while we transfer it to 600,000 on the road every day, it doesn't seem like the comparison to Diglei Midbar, to what happened in the Midbar, is taken as exactly as Rav Moshe Feinstein is transferred as fully as he's trying to think about it. Because if it was, then it's not clear why 600,000 is a number. Because why aren't the women and the children part of the public in the race? Well, women and children don't count for public. But then you'd have to say, what makes you think that every single man, every single day, left his tent, right? If you have nothing to do as he's figuring it, then the number should have been less than 600,000, because they don't all go, especially he's about to say. He does say that he thinks at least 1 out of 5, 1 out of 6, so it could be that you need 2 or 3 million people living there to verify for us the 600,000 are outside. Once you say that, then, anyway, so I think this part of it breaks down a little bit. Another piece of it that becomes his logical claim, but his unsourced logical claim, is that all this also has to happen within an area of 12 meal by 12 meal. Now, a meal is 2,000 amot, and 2,000 amot is somewhere between 3,500 feet to 4,000 feet. So it's just about between two-thirds and seven-tenths, two-thirds and four-fifths of a mile. So 12 meal is somewhere between eight and 10 miles, let's say, something along those lines. Right, so a square area of 8 to 10 square miles is the area you need, and the reason he forgives for that is Kevan D'Alfina Midiglei Midbar, because we derive it from what happened in the desert. What happened in the desert was that that's the size. We know that from other halachot. That's the size of the camp of the desert. And therefore, in Brooklyn, it's not all of Brooklyn that can count. It's got to be an area around Flatbush of 12 mil by 12 mil. If within that area you can have so many people on all the streets during the day, so that becomes a Rishon HaRabim Gemura. He says, I'm sorry, 1 out of 4, 1 out of 5 people. So if you count up the population of the area that's 12 mil by 12 mil, he thinks you get to a number that's maximum 3 million people, he's saying, then he thinks you have to count as Rishon HaRabim. So you have to do the math, but I think it turns out that by his standard, it counts as Rishon HaRabim del Raita. But again, look at the fact that he's taking the Diglei Midbar as the exact example, meaning Rashi and Tosfot never, as far as I remember, and I'm pretty sure I remember, talk about 12 mil by 12 mil. So what are you taking from Diglei Midbar, from what happened in the desert? What are you not taking? And it's unclear. So he's trying to be more serious about taking more of the aspects of the desert stuff and applying them to our halakhic question here based on that Rashi leniency, that Rashi does a leniency, but it's unclear that and we're going to see the Aruch HaShulchan did not think of it that way. But that's what he suggested. And then he points out, though, it gets complicated because there's Gemara of Batra, where Rashbam understands the Gemara to mean that in the desert, they didn't count anybody over 60 for the 600,000. So if you were going to do that with Brooklyn, let's say, you'd have to think, when you do the census, you'd have to know how many people are over 60 and not count them. So he's not sure that you go that far with it. And then he says, and by the way, if you have a highway where 600,000 people travel it, even if the city itself doesn't have 600,000 by his standard, that would be another way to get to Birshut HaRabim D'Oraita. So even if it, you know, if let's say Ocean Parkway or the Bronx Queens Expressway was Queens Expressway doesn't really pass through Flatbush. So if Ocean Parkway passes through Flatbush, and Ocean Parkway, let's say, is a road that commuters use so frequently that it can't, that it has more than 600,000 people on it daily, even if it were to turn out that Flatbush as a neighborhood in the 12 mil by 12 mil radius didn't have the right number of people, that would also make it a Rishon HaRabim D'Oraita, is what he claims. But he says this is also a leniency, because if in that area you don't have enough people to have 600,000 on the streets a day, then you're not going to have to worry about it. But in New York and in Brooklyn, it gets to be a problem because you have big apartment buildings. He says you have some apartment buildings that have 400 families in a very small area because you built up, and therefore he thinks that counts. Now again, that only counts because he's assuming that the percentage of people who go out of that and go into any part of the streets makes it into Rishon HaRabim. And all of these are very new ideas that I'm pretty sure nobody actually sets in before. They're logical extrapolations from the comparison to Diglei Midbar, but they don't have the backing, they don't have the textual backing that ordinarily we would look for in such an idea. And then he says, and I did raise the possibility maybe you'd count the people in the buildings too, which is odd because they're in a Rishon HaYechidit then, but he eventually said, no, it's people who are outside every day, and that's what he thinks, Ladina, and that's what he wrote. And he didn't want to say any of this is a psak, because he's not paskening for the Flatbush Eruv. There are other people who could hold other ways, but he didn't want the word to get out that he had permitted it, because there's other people to rely on. And then he points us to, he says, you can look, for example, the Aruch HaShulchan. And the Aruch HaShulchan sounds very different than what I'm saying. So what does the Aruch HaShulchan say? So he points us to paragraphs 19 and 20. And I thought we would learn those together as well, just to see a little bit of another idea. Says, if we think carefully about this, when the Gemara looks for a source for Hutzah, for the prohibition of carrying on Shabbat, Rav Yochanan says, Moshe calls out, Vayaviru kol b'machaneh, they passed the word through the camp, Vayikaleh ha'am mehavi. This is about donations to the building of the Mishkan, and the people were imprisoned from bringing. So that's the Gemara is pointing to as a source for the idea of carrying, that you're not allowed to carry, because Moshe said to them, don't bring from your homes to me here, because that would be carrying. And what goes on to say, where was Moshe? Moshe was in the Machane Leviyah. Remember that the camping in the desert was, there was an outer ring of the tribes, an inner ring of the Leviim, and within that was the Mishkan, was the tabernacle where Moshe and Aaron and his sons lived. They lived out just outside the tabernacle. That was the Machane Shechina, I think, Machane Mishkan, I think, anyway, and just around it was Leviim, and around it was the rest of the Jewish people. So it sounds like in the Gemara, it's the Machane Leviyah, that's the Rishon HaRabim. So the Aruch HaShulchan says, why should you say the Machane Leviyah was the Rishon HaRabim? Say that Machane Yisrael, which is much bigger, and it's that Machane, the Aruch HaShulchan points out, that was 12 mil by 12 mil, according to Warren Erev and Nun Hayom Bet. So, and all of that Machane, all of that camp, had all the tribes, some on the right, some on the left, and it was all square, right? And that should be Rishon HaRabim as well. Since if Chaf, the Aruch HaShulchan says, L'chein nireh, de'ein liot ba'ir rak Rishon HaRabim echad l'mizrach u'ma'arav, v'chein echad l'tzavon v'drom. So he suggests, the assumption of the Gemara is, there's only one, and the weakness of this claim is why Rav Moshe Feinstein says you have to find another idea. So he suggests that you'd only have in a city one Rishon HaRabim as a road that would go east to west, and another Rishon HaRabim that went north to south. And it had to be, we often say this, it's not so direct here, but we often say it has to be mefulash mi katzel katzel. I think it has to be go straight from one end to the other to be a Rishon HaRabim. And the reason for it is that all the people who live in that place have to go there and no other place. And that becomes the Rishon HaRabim. It's the place where everybody uses it, right? And so in those cities, in those times, the way cities were constructed, well, you'd have a house. The house would be part of a courtyard that shared sort of a public area in the middle of the courtyard. Bunches of courtyards would surround a mavoi, which was like an alleyway surrounded by courtyards, and that alleyway was like the thoroughfare. And those alleyways would all empty into these big roads. And one of those big roads would go east-west, one of those big roads would go north-south, and that's the way you would construct a Rishon HaRabim. And that would be a Saratya. The Gemara talks about a Saratya and a Platya. And a Platya was the marketplace of the entire city, and that's where people come for merchandising. But if it isn't constructed that way, the Aruch HaShulchan says, so, and you live on a street that doesn't connect to that major highway, then you're off the hook. There's no such thing as Rishon HaRabim, and because that's what Rishon HaRabim is, it'd be a place that never gets there. Now, the weakness in that is, it's an odd thing to say. It might be true that in the Middle Ages, and even in the early Achronim period, you know, that there were plenty of cities constructed that way. But just because cities were constructed that way doesn't mean that's what the Gemara was assuming. And it's an odd thing, meaning he's saying that's why the Machane Leviyah was the Rishon HaRabim, because that's the place where everybody went to. And it's only if everybody goes there that it's not. So it's a hard claim. So Moshe Feinstein's response is, first of all, I think you're wrong about the understanding of the Gemara. He says, he's not wrong, but he thinks that the whole Machane Yisrael was in fact the Rishon HaRabim. Although the Aruch HaShulchan has pointed out, the Gemara seems to think that it was the Machane Leviyah that was the Rishon HaRabim. But, and he points out that his grandson, Rabbi Mordechai Tendler, had brought a proof from a Gemara that talks about that they derived the idea that you couldn't throw things for Amot and the Rishon HaRabim in a public place from when the people were weaving the yiriot for the oil, the coverings, when they were weaving them. So there's a thing there, they would throw things to each other, and that was not allowed because it was for Amor on Shabbat. That would not be allowed, and that was clearly not in the Machane Leviyah, because they would then bring the curtains to Moshe Rabbeinu. So these are all questions surrounding, and it's not my place to weigh in on them, and that's why I'm not really going to. I might make a little bit of a suggestion in a second, but these are all questions of when we make comparisons to what went in the Mishkan, how far do we take those comparisons? Rav Moshe Feinstein is pointing out a weakness in the way it had been learned until then, that the comparisons seem not to go as far as they need to. And he says, in the Ruach HaShulchan's picture, it's also odd to say that there's only one Rishon Rabim road each direction. That means if you happen to live in a city where there's a bunch of roads, like think about New York City. Right? New York City has bunches of ways. Let's say you thought of all five roads one big unit. Or just think of Manhattan or Brooklyn. Right? There's lots of ways in and out. They don't line up. And nobody does it one end to the other anymore. That's the way they used to build cities. We don't build them anymore. Does that mean there's not going to be Rishon Rabim though, right? So one possibility is, certainly there are mitzvah, Rosh Peinstein says, but I'm saying, there are halachot in the Torah that were phrased in a certain way and limited to a certain reality, that when that reality changed halakhically, we don't think that you adapt to the reality and say, oh, no. There must be Rishon Rabim. So theoretically, you could say, well, in the time of the Torah, you'd have a road that went straight through, cut through a city end to end. Unless you have that, you don't have Rishon Rabim. And that's it, you don't have Rishon Rabim. There's no halakha, you have to have a Rishon Rabim. So Rav Moshe Feinstein doesn't love that idea. He thinks it's an odd way to say it, that would be the reason why a city wouldn't have it. And therefore, he thinks you got to apply it in the way, and this is like a very big halakhic question of how you apply things to modern situations. Right? Yeah, it's a Rav Moshe Feinstein thing. You have to apply it in a way that it makes sense for the new reality you're in. So if you're in a new reality where there are lots of different streets, and then you go back and you look again. So that's where he is. As I read the tshuva, now, and that would therefore probably have meant that Flatbush could not have an Eruv. You'd have to do the math on the number of inhabitants and what kind of an area. But, for example, that's another interesting question. If you're going to put the Eruv around Flatbush, then they should, I think, put it around much of Brooklyn. But if they're going to build the Eruv, then if he's picking on 12 mil by 12 mil near Flatbush, then he's saying that your fencing that you're going to put around that can't make Flatbush a separate area within it. But I don't know if that would be true either. So I think it gets very complicated. I'm not in any way opposing. I just think that the questions that Rosha Feinstein's are raising are better than the answers to a certain thing that he's giving. Because I think it's probably true that Rashi and the Tosfot didn't mean the comparison as fully as Rosha Feinstein is taking it. That they meant that we see 600,000, I think it's likely that they meant we see 600,000 people, we assume that they all or almost all of them, a vanishing small minority of them didn't go, but basically they all went to the Machane Leviyah every day, and they went there every day to hear a Torah from Moshe Rabbeinu, and their gathering there made it a Rishut HaRabim, and that therefore they said you have to have places that have 600,000 people on them every day, so roads were the most likely place. But if you had a marketplace that had 600,000 people in it, that also would certainly have been good enough, I think, for Rashi and Tosfos. So Moshe Feinstein saying, I don't know why you do that. I think that's probably the answer. He said, I don't know why people have to leave their house every day. I think Rashi and Tosfos, personally, I think they would likely have said, we assume they left every day because we assume they went to learn Torah from Moshe Rabbeinu, and we assume that because, you see, it's Vayikaleha Am Mehavi, they are prevented from going to bring items to the Mishkan, which they bring to Moshe Rabbeinu in Machane Leviyah. I'm not saying historically that's what happened. I'm saying, if I had to guess what Rashi and Tosfos meant, that's what I would have guessed. And that would explain these sugyos in this kind of way. Mordechai Tendler, as Rosh Feinstein quotes him, his grandson, did have this idea that they're clearly talking about the Dalet Amot from something that probably didn't happen in the Machane Leviyah. But I would say that the Dalet Amot, that they're learning that because that's an example of throwing that happens in the building of the Mishkan, and that's good enough for us, whether or not it actually happened in the Rishon HaRabim. That would be my guess, but that's very much how Feinstein had it. So that's why. So he closes again by saying he's only writing because he doesn't want people to think he's the one who's endorsing this, and this is all he wants to say. He wants to say that he has this idea. This is his understanding of how one does or doesn't create a Rishon HaRabim, and how one does or doesn't, therefore, have issues with building an Eruv like in places like Manhattan and like Flatbush. So, response to David, I confess I mostly did as a walk down memory lane for myself from a long time ago when the Flatbush Eruv was a big topic in my life. This is Rosh Feinstein, the Flatbush Eruv, with thanks to the OU, Rabbi Jacob Braumwitz, David Hochhauser, who I may have forgotten to thank at the beginning of this year because I got so caught up in my story about my childhood. I thank them now, and I thank you for listening. I hope you have a great day. Take care.